Moncrief on News Talk.
We were just talking about Debs, the Debses, if that's the plural of Debs. Someone says, I had to bring my son in to get his Deb suit last week. It was one of those moments where I had to play it cool, but I was crying and dying inside. Which would be a good way to describe our next two guests. Barbara and Declan join us once again.
Bag's been crying.
Yeah. Well, I'm obviously dying. I'm way older than everybody else.
Well,
that's great.
You know, on behalf of some of the people who sent in these questions, is what I meant.
Yeah, really. That's what I meant. Yeah, sympathy.
That's a great tee up. I feel really now enthused about this.
Yeah. Right, okay. You're not going to feel better in this one, I don't think. I'd love to hear your thoughts on a dispute I'm currently having with my housemate. There's four of us living in our house. Generally, we get on great, but recently, one of my housemates has moved his desk from his bedroom into the sitting room without consulting the rest of us, and we're annoyed. He's the only one that works from home, so he needs the desk for that, but it's on our way in the sitting room. He's placed it behind our TV, so now the TV has to be pulled out every time he uses his desk, and when he's not using the desk, the TV sticks out in front of it and just looks out of place. He sees nothing wrong with his situation and says that the desk is staying there. While he does have the smallest room, he's been living in the house the longest and has chosen to stay in that room each time a bigger one became available. If he thought his room was too small for the desk, he should have considered that then. We shouldn't have to suffer and avoid the sitting room when he's working. What do you think? Are we overreacting?
I kind of get from your tone what you think anyway. But I actually think that this is, unlike most of the problems we try and solve in here, I think this is fairly clear cut. I think if you're living with others, you can't go in and commandeer an area of what is a shared or communal space as your own and go, I need to work from home and I have a desk and I'm sticking it here, even though it's putting everybody else out. So I think it's very clear cut that he hasn't got a right to stick his desk and move the telly and make the whole place look a bit mental. However, I have two questions. Number one is, the letter writer says that this fella with the desk has the smallest room in the house. And he said that's his choice. He's had it for ages. But I'm wondering, is he paying less rent because he has the smaller room?
Okay.
Because
yeah,
I think if he's paying the same rent as the other laddos who have bigger rooms, he might feel then entitled to take a corner of the living space because he's paying the same as they are. So I have that. The other thing is that it does say in the thing that he moved the desk from his bedroom into the living room. So clearly the bedroom has the space. It mightn't be ideal. It might be a bit of a squish. But, you know, so he really should have, that's where he should have the desk. My other question is that the writer also says that they now have to avoid the sitting room when he's working there. But they also said he's the only one working from home. So I'm wondering, is he doing shift work or something like that? So that, is he there working at the weekend when they're all home, or in the evenings when they're all home, or whatever? Because that is, again, not fair. Totally not fair.
Well, no, that, but some people work for
foreign companies.
So their working day can like
on a different time.
Can they finish work at 10 or something like that?
Well, the bottom line is that I think the letter writer is right. I think your man doesn't have a right to take over the thing without. So I don't think they're overreacting, but I would put the caveat around how much rent he pays, and also about how, you know, I mean, if he was to say, look, I need to put, if he had a foldable, upable desk that he moved out into the living room during the day when they're all in work, and he sat there and he did his work and then he unfolded it and put it back so that in the evening the room was tidy and organised, and on the weekends it was tidy and organised, that would be fine. But I think, yeah, this current situation is untenable in my view. Untenable.
Right. Untenable.
And I couldn't relax if my sitting room was a mess.
No. I agree with you. I agree with you there. I think it's the first issue about the rent thing, is that what's actually going on? Is it the fact that he thinks, because he's paying equal rent but getting less kind of real estate in the bedroom side of it, that he's entitled?
That's not a euphemism.
No, it's not a euphemism.
But he's getting desk space then as well, and he's not paying extra for that.
Yeah, but you know, if you get in the actual original room.
No, I mean, now he is. Now, because now he's kind of taken over part of the sitting room.
You know, the thing about communal spaces is that they should be available for everybody communally to be used at any time.
For the purpose in which they are.
And there's a kind of a ashy or grand mentality is implying that you still have a chair and you still have a telly. What else could you want? You know, that's kind of daft. You know, you need to have a kind of an aesthetic vibe as well. So I think that's where I don't get what this guy's thinking. Sticking the old desk behind the television.
It's a bit weird.
I couldn't visualise that in my head when they were explaining it. I couldn't visualise.
Well, I assume the desk is, or the telly's in a corner, an alcove of some sort, and he's pulled it out and he's slotted his desk in there.
You're just thinking, there's so many wires that go into your telly now with all the bits and pieces and boxes and everything. Like, I couldn't imagine, like... But first of all, if we pulled out our telly, I'd hate to think what we'd find behind it. I mean, they're probably animals that went missing 2 years ago.
The weirdest thing about it all seems to be that, you know, this fold-up desk and put it away at the end of the day solution involves him having to do it. Whereas what's actually happened is that everybody else has to make the kind of pull the telly out if they want to use the communal area.
Yeah.
So it seems that's the bit that I'd have a problem with the most, is going, you're making me do the work so I can use the sitting room, television room, as a television room, because you've set it up to be your desk. That's
I think
stupid.
The key to that, though, is the fact that he's been living in the house longest, so I think he feels a little bit more...
entitled.
What's the word? Proprietorial about the place than the others did, because he says, I've been here the longest. But, I mean, it comes down to what you're paying in rent, as far as I'm concerned. Do you know?
But there has
not
to be
how long you've been
I think there has to be equality of access when it comes to the communal areas. It can't be, oh, this is largely my dressing boudoir, but you can use it whenever I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
That's stupid. It's not, as you say, it's not tenable. But it's also not actually what the room is set up for.
No, it's not, exactly. You know. And I mean, the whole idea of a sitting room is somewhere you can relax, you know. Yeah. So it needs to be relaxing. And having a desk and making the telly go into a funny place isn't relaxing.
If they believe that there's no reason why he can't use the you know, assuming his hours don't clash with their free time, and when they want to use the room for the purpose for which it was originally attributed, that if there was a way in which he could actually just dismantle his business and then put it back up whenever he needed, I can see that working as a solution. But other than that, I think the fact that he just did it, you know, without considering, without speaking to them in the first place, that's
well,
just shady.
I mean, now, that's assuming working from home he has... It's just a laptop maybe he needs, and that he could do that, unless it's like he's got a calligraphy business and,
doing cadavers.
Then that would be tricky. If you're too cheap to, and want to pay rent for the small room, you've no right to put the desk in the sitting room. Barbara is wrong. You'd know she never lived in a house share. Working in living areas is off limits.
That's what I said.
Hello, have you been listening to the right radio station?
Yes.
Did you have a mild stroke in the last 5 minutes?
That's exactly what I said.
Use a hinge, Barbara.
I've hurt. I've been told I'm dying when I came on, and now I've just been shot dead by a listener.
Telling you
for exactly agreeing with this person. Use a hinge desk that lifts flush with the wall when not in use anywhere in the accommodation. Yeah, that sounds complicated. What does this have to do with rent? That's just rude. I'm sorry now. F off with your desk. Rude. Yes. Someone else's Olympics is on in the middle of the day. What if the other housemates want to watch it while he's working? Good point.
Why aren't they working?
Well, they've the day off. They want to look at men bouncing on those things that they're doing now.
That's a diving board?
Men diving boards.
Is that what it is? Yeah, right. Okay.
That's a perfectly normal occupation.
But didn't the writer not say he's passed over a bigger room, so I think he's just not paying for his desk space?
That's exactly what I suspect, yeah.
No, maybe he's not paid that well.
Maybe he's not. You know. But, like, you know, you cut your cloth according to your measure.
Yeah,
maybe calligraphy isn't a very highly paid job.
Maybe it's not. No. Yeah, probably not a huge call for it nowadays. Yeah,
that's possibly what... So what... Should they just kind of sit him down and say, sorry, you're outvoted. Yeah. Move the thing.
Yeah, or but go and exactly get yourself a fold-up desk that you can use, and then, but it can't be in here in the evenings or at the weekends when we're using the
or room. Left in the hallway blocking our, you know, fire exits.
Exactly.
Just common sense. It's like, don't put anything in the kitchen that isn't for kitchen use, and don't put anything in the living area, communal areas that aren't.
Exactly.
You know, whatever.
Des says that they should all buy desks, gamer desks, craft desks, writing desks, put it in the living and the kitchen room, buy a monster sized recliner and stick it in the in the sitting room.
It's called
the desk. Thousands of euro later, they'll have made their point. John says, lads, your man with the desk probably needs internet connection via an Ethernet cable. Tell him to get a longer cable and move the desk somewhere out of the way in the sitting room. Mean git. Ask him if he wants a cup of soup and accidentally spill it over his laptop when you bring it to him. Whoops. He won't be long going back to his room. A lot of people will just do something hoping they'll get away with it.
Yeah, true.
And then they'll defend it to the hilt when challenged. Be prepared for that defence, but don't back down.
Yes.
And someone else says, make as much noise and disturbance as possible when he's on his work calls and do it naked. That'll do the trick.
It will,
yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
How do you know, Barbara? You've never lived in a house here.
Yeah. I have actually lived in a house, but anyway.
We're getting texts in from people saying Barbara Scully used to wander around the house naked and I was on a work call.
It's in her book.
I read it in her book.
That is a lie. Spurious lie.
I'm 31. And I wonder if this is from these two ones connected. I'm 31 and considering a career change, but I'm worried it's too late. I'm currently a freelance graphic designer, but it's not really my passion. I was good at art in school and the points were within my reach. So that's what I decided to do. But my priorities have changed since I was making that decision at 18. I've always been a people person and thrive when I'm interacting with others. Something that's lacking in my solitary career. I also think I'd get more job satisfaction out of helping people or making a difference. I've always been interested in a career in medicine, but didn't believe myself intelligent enough in school and haven't had the confidence to back myself to do it since. Mm. I'm beginning to think now is the time, but I'm worried I'm too old and will be even older when I finish the course. Am I delusional to consider such an undertaking, or should I take the leap of faith?
Aww, that's a nice letter.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, 31 and they think they're too old. It's like, yeah, bless. Look, this is...
is that it?
No,
yeah, bless.
I mean,
no, but consider first, though, that if they're saying they want to do medicine, the 31 now, like, what time, what age?
7 years, isn't it?
Yeah, they're about. So they're, you know, they're hitting 40 by the time. And actually, they're a junior doctor working 90 hours a week, getting paid damn all.
Rather than speaking kind of abstractly about this, I can give an example of somebody in my family who went back to study medicine after raising 3 children. And she went... did it slowly part-time and is only at the stage now in you know, would be in their 40s.
Okay.
Starting GP work in her own practice now. Right. And I mean, again, this relates to what I was going to say as a good example, because my point is that it is never too late to do something that you really care about. It's never too late to make a career change. In fact, most people these days make several kind of career changes during their lives. And I think the self-doubt or the not backing yourself is what holds people back from moving on from situations which they may either be overqualified for or underpaid for, or just basically, like this person said, not exuding the passion for it, whatever. I think that it's really important that you take a good stock of what it is that you would like to do, because being happy with your choices is kind of really, it's kind of central to kind of finding happiness in your life. Now, the person in this particular story has made one point, which I'd kind of temper my answer with the plain go for it. And I'd say that medicine, as you've alluded to, is a career that requires a certain amount of training. The training is difficult and it's long. It's also expensive and it requires a certain kind of aptitude. Not that I'm in any way placed to decide whether this person has the aptitude, but the system is designed to kind of weed out or to kind of encourage the people that do. And from that point of view, even the application process, which I know from my family member who I mentioned earlier on, there's aptitude exams and stuff like that required in order to even win a place at medicine school. So engaging with that process is something that you could do while you're in your current job.
Yes,
so,
absolutely. So
cutting you know everything out and then just jumping a leap of faith, I wouldn't suggest that. I would definitely suggest that if you're not happy in the career you've got right now, to find an alternative. The alternative may not be the exact medicine career that you're dreaming about, but you should definitely explore that. And I would say the best way to explore that is to do some, I think they're called the HPAT exams, and you sit aptitude tests. And obviously as well, you need to have I don't know for older, mature students,
the thing is,
but I do think you need to have a certain minimum level of points in order to get into college. But I think it's something you should definitely explore. Do not think of yourself as too late, because you know, it's never too late.
No, I would echo that exactly. I mean, it is never too late, and you are only 31, which is very, very young. So I mean, I don't have any of the experience you have with your family member of how the process works. Obviously I know medicine is a long haul as regards you know, training for it and all that kind of stuff, and I think your advice is sound, that you know, you don't maybe jump completely from one to the other, but you certainly explore it. I think very often in life as well, you can think you're, you know, you can make a decision like this. You can sit down and go, I don't really, not really happy being a graphic designer, freelance graphic designer. Don't like the solitary nature. I love the fact that she's driven towards medicine by the fact that she's a people person, because I think that's very often missing in medical consultants in particular, the people aspect of it. So I think that's great. But I think very often, even if you think, oh, maybe I want to go down that route, always keep your eyes open to opportunities, because as you start to, as you say, investigate that, very often something that you hadn't anticipated will come in from the side, from the wings, that you'll go, oh, I never thought of that. Maybe I'll go down that road. So, you know, life is short and it's long. You know, there's plenty of time. Keep your options open. Keep your mind open. But I think the first step is recognizing the fact that you're not happy. And that's really important, because I think we all spend, and it's one of the things I'm always saying to my kids, do a job you love. Don't focus too much on the money or the anything else. I mean, obviously, it's nice to earn a decent wage. But I have always, and I'm glad I've did it, I've always chosen jobs that I've really enjoyed. Hence, I'm sitting here in this studio rather than jobs that are going to make me
finally gets the, hits the big time with the big money.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's your sack of cash is waiting for you outside. Yeah,
exactly. And my chauffeur drive home. But, you know, we spend too much of our lives in work to be unhappy in what we do. So I think it's really important that you enjoy what you do. So go for it. And as I have said here before, it's better to try and fail than to die wondering, or something, words to that effect.
No one ever put in their headstone, I wish I'd gone to more meetings.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
One texter says 7 years to be qualified, 14 or 15 years if you want to be a GP or a consultant. Another texter says, now this is in capital letters, Jesus Christ, I'm 52 and considering a change. So good for you.
Good.
Gary says, has that person considered a career as an art therapist? Which is kind of echoing the point you were making. Yeah. It mightn't necessarily be medicine.
Yeah, but it's something aligned.
Yeah. It's a huge commitment to want to be a doctor. You need to be very sure you want to do it before going in.
Yes.
When I was studying to be a doctor, the majority of my people in my class dropped out.
Well, again, that's because a lot of the time they're starting directly from school. They go straight into school and you're kind of trained as a school kid to believe two things, which are not true. Yeah. One is that the best thing you can do is get into the hardest to get into courses. And the other one is that whatever aptitudes or grades you had when you were 16 or 17 define you for the rest of your life. And neither of those things are true. I think, yes, being a doctor is expensive and it's long training. It's a big, big undertaking.
Yeah.
I wouldn't jump straight from being a graphic designer into doing that, you know, by quitting your job tomorrow. But I would definitely explore into the areas and look into maybe areas that are adjacent to medicine.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You make a really good point, though, because our education system is so broken with this idea of it's all about the points you get that determines where you go. That is the most awful thing that we do to our young people at 18. Oh, you've got however many the top points are now. You need to go law or medicine.
And everybody who I've ever read telling me, you know, their story of their success always seems to have a story about, I started off doing blah, blah, blah. Then I had this kind of road to Damascus moment where I realised I hated
this isn't me.
And then I just, you know, took a punt on myself. And now look at me, I'm really happy or successful or rich or gorgeous.
Whatever it is I am. What are you? Rich
gorgeous
or gorgeous?
All those things,
Richard Gorgeous.
That's because from his Bitcoin investments. That's what that's from. There's a woman down the road from me who has gone back to med. She's in her 50s, says one texter. I've been a university lecturer for over 20 years. We've had students of every age, from direct entry from school to people in their 60s. It's never too late.
Yes.
And mature students often get so much more from education with life experience under their belt. Mm-hmm. Marin says, medicine's only 4 years if you already have a degree. Now, maybe this person has some sort of art degree as well. Tell her to look at the pharmacy course and she can do a pharmacy technician course first in ATU, Donegal or Sligo, and can progress onto pharmacy if they're able for it, says Maureen. I worked in retail for 37 years. At 50, I started working as a carer. Money is shite, but I love it. The amount of weirdos they meet every day is brilliant. And they're my work colleagues. When the crash happened and I lost my job, I went back to college at 41 and did a computer science degree. And I've had 10 years of a very satisfying new career. Yes, it was stressful at the time, committing to full-time studying, a paying a mortgage, but it was 100% worth it. I'd recommend it to anyone that feels they really want to do something they love, says Brian. I returned to education at 27 and qualified as a vet at 32. I haven't looked back. It's never too late.
Oh, this is great. This is all this positivity, waves of positivity.
Yeah, Kevin says, I know an excellent medical consultant of 35 years. He told me he wouldn't have a hope in hell of passing the HPAT. He also, that's not a very good thing if you're a consultant to tell people. He also said that if he had his time over, he wouldn't be a consultant. As even though he's on great money now, he lost the best years of his life, 18 to 35, as all he did was study and work.
They're not the best years of your life.
Exactly, good point.
There's also the bit, though, is that, you know, it's
some consultant he is.
Yeah.
Experiencing one thing from one side and then on the other is always a nice thing. Not knowing is always going to bug you. So just explore and have a go.
I've been in a long-term relationship with a lad for the last 6 years. He treats me very well and we get on great. We have a yin-yang relationship. I'm loud and extrovert and he's more reserved and introverted. Although we get on well, I feel like a lot of our chats are very surface level. I don't feel like he really opens up to me. And it feels like we are missing that closeness. It's making me question the future of our relationship. My friends tell me that's just Irish men, but I can't help feeling like there's a void in the relationship. When I bring it up with him, he acts like he doesn't know what I'm talking about. What should I do? I don't think I can continue with the relationship unless this changes.
I love this. This is really interesting, right? Because, well, the first thing that struck me when I was reading this is that this person has been in a long-term relationship for 6 years and is now deciding that the relationship, the conversations within the relationship are a tad shallow.
Interesting,
and not very interesting and not at a level that they would like, and that they're missing a kind of a conversational intimacy or closeness or whatever. Because surely that's not something that has developed. Surely that was there from the get-go. Mm. So why is this now becoming an issue? Park that. But the other thing...
I know. Yeah, she's exactly. Paused for breath. That's what happens.
Yeah, exactly. but I don't think... If this is the issue, if we take it on face value and we say this is the issue and that she's suddenly come to this realisation, I don't think it necessarily can be a red flag. Like, you've got to add up... When you look at a relationship, you've got to add up all the pros and cons. And if everything else works, not having the deep, soul-searching, in-depth conversations is not necessarily... You can work around that and you can get those conversations from other people. And you can still... It doesn't necessarily mean... And I may or may not be speaking from my own experience here. But you don't... You know, it doesn't mean that the person that you're in the relationship with is... of themselves shallow and without a soul and without an ability to kind of ponder the greater mysteries of life. It's just that they don't maybe want to articulate or they don't, it's not something that interests them in that particular way. But go back to the 6 years. I have a feeling she's getting these conversations somewhere else. And I have a feeling that that's why she's now going, oh, Joe, the office is great. Like, we have these really great in-depth conversations. And now she's thinking of, like, Michael doesn't give me that at all. And Joe's also very good looking. And I think that's what's going on.
Ooh, wow. That's like, that was
I wish I had that. I used to have one. I can go, I press a button and do that. Yeah. Okay.
Wow, that was a bit of a leap there, Mark. Adding in a whole storyline that wasn't there.
This could be one of the issues I have in my life. Very, 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 very vibrant imagination.
No,
but you don't think
that.
It's odd.
No, I think that's, I was going to come up from the other point of view is that sometimes, you know, you might be the most compelling extrovert character at the beginning of a relationship, but as the relationship kind of goes on a little bit, your voice starts to become annoying, and not yours personally, but you know,
you pointed at me again. This is the third insult I've had.
Not you,
not
Barbara.
Me. Yeah.
Casey took offense, but that was too late, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's that thing of like, you know, when you're in a relationship with somebody at the beginning, you kind of overlook some of the characteristics that may, if, you know, become annoying.
But or, 6 years.
Yeah, but I mean, 6 years, 6 years. I mean,
a 6 year itch in a relationship thing? Because I suppose they're at the point now that it's kind of poor get off the pot time. So, you know, she's starting to think.
The thing about closeness, though, is that I dispute the fact that, you know, this scurrilous claim that Irish men aren't whatever, you know, able to do X, Y, that's like nonsense. Because you don't have to speak of your emotions, as you pointed out, in that kind of, you know, overly kind of poetic way to have deep emotions.
Exactly.
You don't have to be engaging in conversations about your relationship to be fully committed to your relationship.
That's exactly
and you don't need to be talking, you know, to ask somebody if if they're okay, if you're already making sure that they're okay. Yeah. So there's loads of things, layers that can go on in a relationship that don't necessarily need the kind of explicit subtitled version of your relationship, because you can actually be doing all the things, you can have in all those boxes checked without needing to have that kind of conversation, unless, as you point out, you know, there's a comparison to be made between, you know, whatever else. You said something else I found very interesting, though, was that you said getting the conversations from somewhere else. I don't necessarily think that the conversation needs to be coming from one other person, but it could be that it's like other people in general in your life can fill in.
Oh, I agree. But I'm just wondering, in this case, is there somebody specific that she's really enjoying these conversations with, and it's making her compare them to the conversations she has at home?
If you think about most relationships, and I'm going to create a stereotypical, probably going to get myself in trouble, like a heterosexual Irish couple where the female in the couple goes off and hangs and has her girly chats with her girly friends and talks about the certain kind of things with her girl pals that she wouldn't necessarily talk to with her partner, and that rounds off certain aspects of her emotional needs and whatever. And this is a kind of a similar scenario, is that you can get the bits that are missing from other people. And is something happened within the letter writer's life over the last 6 years, which means that she's kind of not put all of her eggs in the one basket, but she's only kind of interacting with the one person at home all the time, and that's making her life feel smaller rather than there being any flaws. Maybe,
that's an interesting point, yeah. But it's just that she says, I don't think I can continue with the relationship.
Yeah. Well, I can't help but thinking that they're two different people. She does most of the talking, he does less of the talking. That's the way people differ in those ways.
Yeah.
And what that says to me is, over the last 6 years, she has made zero effort to get to know this guy. She's so fond of listening to her own voice. Because people communicate what they might be thinking or feeling in different ways. Yes. Not necessarily pouring their heart out, the way they act, the way they might intone things. Little gestures, all sorts of ways. And she's made zero effort to learn any of those. He should dump her.
Din, din, din.
He should dump her. Because she's just interested in the tone. And she only wants him to talk to her now as some sort of, I don't know, it almost sounds like some form of entertainment
in
for
her. In her own love language.
No, I don't think that's fair. But I do think she's already made up her mind that this relationship is toast. And I think she wants us to tell her, like, if he's not willing to talk to you deep and, you know, deep spiritual things, well, then you need to dump him.
Maybe they are incompatible in that way, but like I said earlier on, just because somebody isn't saying "I love you" every day doesn't mean that they don't love you deeply, you know.
Yeah.
And just, you know, be careful what you wish for.
Anyway, one person thinks she should jump ship. It's only going to get worse. Myself and my husband rarely have deep emotional conversations. Would be exhausting if we had that all the time. We'd actually have emotional conversations when something is wrong. The rest of the time, I have deep conversations with my friends and probably more crack on a night out than my husband. But it doesn't mean we don't love each other
and don't enjoy each other's company. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's the point. And you can always get a cat or a dog.
Yeah, exactly.
I have great conversations with the dog.
I recently found out that my best friend is pregnant. And although I'm over the moon for her, I hate to admit I'm also slightly jealous. My friend met a wonderful man about 4 years ago. They built a house within a year. They were engaged within two. She got married last year. Now she's pregnant. I can't help but feel that things have just worked out for her and that I'm being left behind. I've spoken to a few of my other single friends about it and they feel the same way. We're all in our early 30s. How do we put the green-eyed monster to bed and just be happy for our friend?
Maybe just be happy for your friend. I mean, it's quite simple. Look, I guess that, you know, as life progresses, I do get that if you're in a group of people and, you know, one or two of them end up accomplishing things or achieving things or getting things or setting up relationships ahead of you, that you can feel that you're being left behind. But, you know, I hate to break it to you, it could actually be that you never get those things that other person has. It might never be
loser.
The case. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You two are horrible.
But it could be.
But this is your compassion and empathy.
Be happy. It's luck. It's luck she met this fella.
All those things are luck.
What
is driving this is not an ambition to achieve in a kind of a material or an educational or a career sense.
Absolutely.
This is driven. I would put money on it by the biological clock. The fact that if you're a young woman and you're in your 30s and your friend has got, you know, found a fella 4 years ago and is now pregnant, and as you know, she's all those things sorted. That is what you're missing. Not achieving as regards, you know, I need to buy a house, I need to have a career. It is that, and it is a drive that is subconscious. It is,
but it doesn't need to bleed over into the commercial acquisition of property and jobs and all that kind of stuff.
Completely by the fact that she now.
I understand an element of it might,
most women,
I think that aspects of it are a bit.
Want to be a mother, and I think that that is what's driving it.
It's the TikTok.
TikTok.
I think we can say to this woman though, we do a nice, do know a very nice graphic designer. He's gonna change career, but you never know. He could be the guy for you, Barbara and Declan. Thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.